It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The Julia Hartley Brewer Podcast.
Ruthless but fair. Julia Hartley Brewer.
Comprehensive coverage of all the news stories that matter to you.
Harder, older, Hartley Brewer.
The Julia Hartley Brewer Podcast from Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome back. I'm Douglas Murray and you're with Talk TV. Today, we're asking about the UK's counter-extremism czar's comments where he said that London has become a no-go area for Jews following pro-Palestinian protests. I want to know what your reaction is. Is he right? You can get involved in that discussion by texting on 87222. That's 87222. Or you can tweet us on X, at TalkTV. That's X at TalkTV. I can never get used to calling Twitter X.
Yeah.
Anyhow, joining me now to run through all the top stories is former government advisor Claire Pearsall and political commentator Esther Krakow. Thanks so much for being with me, both of you. First of all, let's go to some of our callers, texters, tweeters, Xers. What have you got, Esther?
So Clyde says the UK has become unrecognisable these days. It's tragic. And Jake also said, I'd love to hear the reaction of the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. I'm sure he'd shoehorn the far right into it somewhere whilst blaming Brexit.
I don't doubt it. Claire?
You've got Mark says, yes, most definitely London has become a no-go zone for Jews and UK citizens alike if you don't support Palestine. And then somebody, who was it? There's Paul, who very funny. I like this one, who said, then the UK's counter-terrorism czar admits he's not doing his job.
Which is a good point.
An interesting point.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
I think Paul is probably, a little bit bang on the money on that.
I wonder what he is expected to do. Let's go to that point about the mayor of London, because this is really striking to me. I've got a long memory and a long voting record of voting no to things that I think are going to make life in Britain worse. And I remember 25 years ago, we had a vote in London as to whether or not we wanted a London mayor. Most people don't remember this. But I voted no that we didn't. I'm told since that apparently there's lots of things the mayor can do that's made things better. Building regulations, apparently it's much easier to do. But my ancient insight, my ancient wisdom on this was as follows, that the more levels of government you have, the more people can avoid responsibility
Absolutely.
For anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would say, and what your reaction is, I'd say that that applies nowhere more than with the police. Policing powers in this country. Everybody is saying that the Metropolitan Police have been getting these protests wrong, that from the beginning they've been policing them badly. They've allowed, as we saw, certainly in the first weeks, unbelievable things to be said, chanted, and raised on the streets of London. But who is actually responsible for the police?
But I think that's that. Yeah. You've touched on the second point as well. So more levels of government obviously makes things more inefficient and clunky. But also, who's filling those gaps and those new levels that you've created? And it's usually people with very limited experience on the job. Mm-hmm. So you now have people being ushered into senior levels in the police force that don't actually have any on-the-ground experience. They have a degree from a university that says they can police in theory, but in practice, it's completely different. And so you have all these kind of bureaucrats being being shoehorned in because they have a sexy degree from an unknown former polytechnic university.
You say a sexy degree?
Well, sexy. Yeah. Oh, I have an MA and this and that. And then they get into the role, they have no practical experience. And they have all this debt and they're overpaid more than people with practical experience. Yeah. And so it's a kind of a double whammy. You have these unnecessary positions being filled by people with no experience. That's the problem.
You do. And I think the police itself needs to be one entity and controlled by a body. And I think you're right. Nobody takes ultimate responsibility. If you look at the Metropolitan Police, you have the Mayor of London, you have police and crime commissioners, and then notionally the Home Office.
Right.
So notionally. Who are in charge of policing strategy.
And who of those... Because, you know, we hear of a Home Secretary calling in the Mayor calling in the heads of police.
Yeah.
Who actually is responsible for the Metropolitan Police?
Well, no one. It's a giant clunking mess.
You have, the Mayor of London acts as the Police and Crime Commissioner for the Metropolitan Police. So, therefore, Sadiq Khan, current London Mayor, would be the one to be held responsible.
But Sadiq Khan keeps saying that it's not his responsibility.
And there is your issue, because you also have the Home Secretary, who will be responsible in part for parts of policing, and the Chief Commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, as the head honcho of the Metropolitan Police, ultimately should land on his shoulders. So you get into this really weird situation where you've got people in charge of bits of it and nobody wants to take responsibility for the entirety.
And the people in charge of the bits of it have no experience with policing. Sadiq Khan doesn't know anything about policing and neither does the Home Secretary. So that's what you have, these layers of unnecessary government, and then they're being filled by people with no experience. And this is the problem.
And you see that with the introduction of the Police and Crime Commissioner position, which I thought was a ridiculous idea when it came out.
That's another layer.
It is another layer, and it is people with absolutely pretty much zero responsibility
and no
of policing.
Vision, because now we see community policing has all been gutted. Right?
I don't think that's the result of
these people don't know what they're doing.
No, they don't know what they're doing. But I think the problem is funding on that respect. But no, they don't understand the needs of policing. They've never been a serving police officer, and they don't understand what the community needs.
But I'll tell you one thing absolutely mystifies me about the Metropolitan Police in particular is we have had these protests now for months. Yep. And by the way, this isn't the same in other countries. I mean, whatever you think about the right to protest and all that, the British public do believe in the right to protest. There's no doubt. All the polls show, very, very wide-ranging support for this. We recognise it as we were talking about earlier, a fundamental British right. However, other countries don't allow this. France, which is not an uncivilised country, the president banned marches from the beginning. He said, no, this is not, the streets of Paris are not to be shut down because of protests about a war in the Middle East. So other countries have managed that, but aside from actually shutting down the protests, which I say is sort of not a very British thing to do, the thing that amazes me is that we see the Metropolitan Police week after week, sometimes being taunted by protesters, very often being dealt with in a threatening manner by protesters. We see people who have undoubtedly broken the 2006 Terrorism Act by glorifying terror. And the police stand around and they seem to sort of take it. Now, whenever I speak to the police about this, I get told, well, our advice is to hold back. But here's the thing I don't understand. And it's true that they hold back and sometimes they go in and arrest people in the early hours of the morning. And they forget, of course, that the British public and the public around the world do not see those early morning house raids. They do see people on our streets in front of Westminster Abbey, in front of the Cenotaph, defacing our public monuments and much more. But the thing that amazes me is this. A few years ago, during COVID, during lockdowns, the Metropolitan Police acted like a crack squad against the British public. And some of us also remember that when there was a candlelit vigil for Sarah Everard in London, the police went in all batons blazing. I said at the beginning of these protests, when the police seemed to have such trouble working out that if somebody was calling out jihad on the streets of London, they might be a wrong'un. I said what those big bearded maniacs shouting jihad on the streets of London should have done in order to get arrested by the police was to have a candlelit vigil for a murdered woman.
Exactly.
But anyway, Esther, what do you think?
Well, I think one of the things is the numbers are not on the Metropolitan Police's side. So obviously the numbers of the Palestinian protesters dwarf that of any vigil, any BLM protest. So the police can't throw their weight about there. But I actually think there's just been a reluctance to actually police the protests as opposed to kind of managing and ushering them on. I absolutely believe in the right to protest. I think any British person does and should. But you have to manage it, because in the same way that we don't and we shouldn't tolerate, for instance, Just Stop Oil protesters gluing themselves to the M25 or defacing public monuments and all of that, we shouldn't tolerate this either. If you know that something like this, which is very incendiary, is going to draw huge crowds, you isolate them. You say, this is your space to do what you want. In this space, you can do whatever you want. We'll be around if anyone needs help. There must be a number limit, because we cannot have such a large space that would accommodate people in their millions. That's ludicrous, and we don't have the resources for that. Look at how much this is costing.
I know, but I think if they'd done it right from the start, if they had removed offensive banners, if they had removed people who were chanting from the river to the sea, which is offensive, and projecting things onto the House of Commons, if they'd done that right from the start and said, we aren't going to tolerate any of this, you are allowed to protest, you have the right to protest, anything that is supporting a prescribed organisation, anything that is going to be offensive and is going to cause alarm, it has to be stopped. The law, they have the laws there to do it. It's not as if that you need any more legislation.
Yeah.
You don't. You've got it. The police just need to actually do their job. And if they'd done it right from the start, we wouldn't be in this mess now.
We'll move on to Rishi Sunak in a moment, but I just want to throw one other thought out to you about the police. We had the news this week that police in the UK solved no burglaries in half of the country. I just want to read that out again, just in case anyone missed that or thought I had misread my cue. Absolutely, you heard it right. In half of the country, the British police solve zero burglaries. So,
why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When, Esther, you say the cost of policing these protests, I mean, this is actually something that costs everyone.
Well, exactly. It's extraordinary. I cannot believe the lack of foresight of the people in charge of these institutions, because this harks back to the point, there are people in charge that don't know what they're doing. There are too many layers of government to have these people that don't know what they're doing take responsibility for the fact that they don't know what they're doing. And this is a prime example. At the end of the day, you cannot justify having let these protests get to where they are when like half of burglaries are not being solved. I mean, that's ludicrous.
There was a case I read about recently. It was a woman who was burgled at her house in St. Albans. And she had CCTV of the burglar. And the police were not interested. And one reason the police weren't interested is there is no police station in St. Albans. And that is a story that you hear up and down this country. That the old idea that you just, oh, well, report it to the police, try to call the police, good luck to getting a response. Try to find a police station, you can't find one.
I think the closest one is Hatfield. I mean, I live in that area. I sort of live in the kind of the North London, St. Albans, Hatfield, Barnet area. I think the only one is, now thinking about it, Barnet and Hatfield. Those are the two closest police stations, which are at least like 20 minutes
away. I live out in the countryside, the glorious Kent countryside, and live in a low crime area. But people have car crime. There is,
you can't get insurance on a Range Rover now.
Absolutely. Yep. And it is things like that, that police just give you a crime reference number, tell you to go sort it out with your insurance company, and that's your
One lady was told to nick her car back.
Yes.
Because she had a tracker on it. Yes.
Yeah,
so she reported her car stolen, but she had a tracker on it, so she knew where it was. And the police told her, yeah, go nick it back.
Yeah, and it's
just but if they have a knife, stay back.
And the same with bicycle. Somebody locally had seen their bicycle that had been stolen, was advertised on a social media site for sale, and she said to the police, "This is it. You know, here you go." And they went, "We'll go and buy it back then."
Wow, that's crack squad policing isn't it? You can scroll online and see if your stolen objects are there and buy them back at a markup.
Yeah.
Whilst I've got you, I also want to bring up one other thing, which is we're talking about police, we're talking about the state of the country and these extraordinary, bewildering, I think, protests that have been going on all these months. We should pause a moment to reflect that last week, this time last week, late on Friday night, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak announced that he was going to speak to the country. And he did, and he came out onto the steps of a darkened number 10 Downing Street. Mm. And he gave this 10-minute address about our democracy being in peril, about the threats to our way of life and much more. And within 24 hours, it seems, everyone had forgotten about it. What was that about? What would you say, after your experience in government, what was going on that made this happen?
It was a knee-jerk reaction to what had happened in the by-election the day before in Rochdale.
Yeah.
OK, so I don't want anybody to think that the words weren't needed to be said, because I agree with what Rishi Sunak said.
Hmm.
Did he need to run out onto the streets of Downing Street and do it at 6.45 on a Friday evening? Oh, sorry, 5.45
on a
Friday evening.
That is strange timing, isn't it?
Just in time for the 6 o'clock news headlines.
Yeah, brilliant.
And the amount of hairs that were set running in the media, Tory MPs, the comments that were coming through, what's he going to say? People were coming to me and I was like, I don't know what he's going to say. That aside, I think that it was just that knee-jerk reaction. It was, we need to say something, I need to look as though I'm on top of this. When realistically, he could have just done that on Monday in the House of Commons as a statement. You didn't need to go and stand there.
It was so clearly a reaction to the Rochdale by-election, which is disappointing. So you've seen the country go through this for months and you didn't feel a need to say this. You've seen sort of anti-Semitic slogans being chanted on the streets of London for months and you didn't feel the need to say this. But when George Galloway wins a by-election in Rochdale, that's when you're
suddenly
nervous.
You're running scared.
Exactly. And the thing is, George Galloway, again, he's a crank. But they didn't want to learn the lessons that should have been learned from that by-election. They just decided to say, oh, the crank's been elected, so we're really in trouble now. It's ludicrous.
OK, and it was, you know, it's a democratically elected individual, whether you agree with him or not. The people of Rochdale have put him into the House of Commons. That should have been the end of it.
And they didn't talk about anything else that he said outside of Gaza. They didn't talk about, you know, opening up the maternity care and the emergency and the A&E and at sort of Rochdale Infirmary.
Did he run on that a lot?
Well, no, but he spoke about that. He spoke about bringing back the Association Football, Rochdale Association Football Club. He spoke about law and order and bringing in more community policing.
Yeah, but I mean, that wasn't why he won the election.
But the point is, Labour, who should have been running on that, have not said anything even remotely associated with things that affect local people. But they're more incensed by something that's going on in the Middle East.
Well,
that's the frustration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you agree, though, panel, with the with Rishi's claim that extremists are targeting democracy?
I think it was a real headline-grabbing moment. And there is a problem with extremism within the United Kingdom. I don't think anybody can sit there and say that there isn't. But he didn't give any idea as to how to actually deal with it.
The extremists are the people in Parliament, and the extremism is extreme complacency. That's the problem. That's the extremism. The extreme apathy and complacency and luxury belief of the M25 elite bubble. That's the extremism. Because you have to be an extremist to watch your country and in many ways aid it decline in this way.
But if you're not going to do anything about it, if you're not going to give a bunch of solutions to it, then it is pretty pointless to stand there and say, this is an affront to our democracy. It's like, OK, well, Prime Minister,
That goes to something I said earlier, which is it all feels so dated. Everything he said sounded like the things that Blair said after the 2005 suicide bombings in London.
Yeah.
It was all this sort of, we've got to stand up to the extremists and much more. But I don't see them actually doing that. I mean, there's two names I want to throw out, both of you, before we go to the break. The first is David Amiss. Sir David Amiss, when he was brutally murdered by a jihadi a couple of years ago, everybody of his former colleagues stood up in several hours in the House of Commons and they paid great tribute to a wonderful, lovely man. But none of them said what the ideology of his attacker was.
Yeah, of course,
it was as if he died of natural causes.
Of consumption.
And yeah. And I am still amazed by this. I think they did him great dishonour, by the way. Because when Joe Cox was brutally murdered, MPs quite rightly said, we will find out the ideology of the person who did this and we'll tackle it. And they did. And we do as a society. I think we have absolutely no truck in Britain for the very occasional kind of neo-Nazi, extremist like that. And they have no real presence on the streets, as far as I can see. And if they did, almost everyone in Britain would stand up to them. But when it's a jihadist murderer, maniac, right, the one who killed David Amiss, all of David Amiss's colleagues stand there in Parliament and they talk about things like the Online Harms Bill.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with it.
Isn't it incredible that Rishi Sunak, and MPs have welcomed this, he's greenlit £30 million in extra funding for added police protection for MPs, but they're not willing to question the reason or the ideology which necessitates this need for heightened security. They're happy to take the extra security, they just don't want to question why it's necessary or what's behind it. It's the same thing.
Yeah, and I think it is really difficult to kind of balance that off with that speech. Mm. And if you're not going to call out who the extremists are,
right,
then what's the point?
It reminds me of some years ago when there was a rally against anti-Semitism in London. There was a prominent reform rabbi and she said that everyone should have the same slogan as the anti-fascists did in the 1930s, they shall not pass. And I said afterwards, but who?
Yes.
Who? Now, there's one other name I want to throw out, which is the name, of course, of Suella Braverman. Mm. Because I was struck, one other thing on this with Rishi's speech last week, I was struck by something. Everything he said in this emergency late-night statement on the steps of Downing Street, wasn't it just what Suella Braverman has said some months ago?
With a bit more padding.
And in that case, isn't the former Home Secretary, who was fired for her comments, isn't she just guilty of being correct but too early?
Well, mm-hmm. This is the thing. So Suella Braverman was basically Rishi Sunak's attack dog. She was supposed to say things that he couldn't say, but he knew needed to be said because, one, a lot of it is right, and two, it gives him some sort of conservative credentials. The problem with Suella Braverman is that she didn't have, I suppose, the political acumen to know when something should be said, how to say it, and all of that. But yeah, many people agreed with her. So she left Rishi no choice but to distance himself from her. But now he's trying to say the same things basically that she was saying, but with a bit more tact. The problem is, you can say what you want, but if you're not going to do anything
And that is my whole point. I mean, I'm not a great fan of Suella Braverman. That comes to no surprise to anybody. But unless you are going to have something to back it up, then all you're doing is putting out some words.
Yeah, hot air.
Right.
And people will agree with them, people will disagree with them, and then they'll move on.
Yep.
But realistically, the problem is still there.
Yeah.
The problem is still left undealt with.
We have had an awful lot of words in the last 20 years on this problem. And, I've run out of counting the number of times people have said, we're gonna deal with this. It's an urgent thing. And the years pass and the decades pass.
The Julia Hartley Brewer Podcast.
Ruthless but fair. Julia Hartley Brewer.
Comprehensive coverage of all the news stories that matter to you.
Harder, older, Hartley Brewer.
The Julia Hartley Brewer Podcast from Talk Radio.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/ upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.